Good morning, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are turning towards life, as always. And we are coming to you. Hold on a second, I've got to turn something off. We're coming to you live, as usual, with a wonderful source this week, chosen by Justin. And I just want to say, if anybody ever feels confounded or confused by the sources, then welcome to my world. One of my favorite things is reading one of the things that mostly that Justin brings, because I'm not sure I, well, no, sometimes I bring things that confound me
Yeah, indeed.
myself. But I feel so glad that I can, as a person who finds lots of kind of very academic things quite inaccessible, I'm so grateful that I have this place and this relationship, Justin, so that those things don't have to not be in my life. You know, it's like certain things where I think, oh gosh, well, I'm kind of excluded from that because I don't have that kind of intellectual brain, or I'm not particularly academic or whatever. But then we can be here and we can talk, and I can find my way with things, which is very different to kind of what's historically happened with me in my general education, which is, oh, I can't do that, so I just will kind of wing it and have a go, but it's really not much point in me being here. And then when we're here, I can be safe enough to say I don't understand, feel I don't understand, but then not let the wisdom or the magic or the gift of whatever the source is escape me, because we're in relationship about it. And I think that's one of the big, big, big things that's missing in our culture, is that so many times we don't get to be in relationship around things, and so we feel excluded from them and like they're not for us or something. Because we don't have that immediate natural propensity to be able to engage with a certain kind of something. So I'm very amazed that that can be how this works, that I can feel included, and I really want, you know, really want to learn. Like, that's the thing, is that you know, I read this source today, this wonderful letter, and I thought, oh gosh, I don't understand anything that says, and I'm not going to turn away, you know. And so then I just kept reading it, and I kept reading it, and softening and softening, and kept reading it. And I feel like I've in some way got somewhere with it now, because I know that me just turning away, and that part of me that says, oh, you can't do that, just stop reading it and don't bother, that part of me doesn't need to kind of lead the conversation. I can still engage, even though that part's alive, and I can still be curious and be here with you. So anyway, I want to welcome everybody. Maybe you find this easy and wonderful, and maybe you don't, and all of it's welcome here, and we'll find our way and see how this goes, as we always do in this straightforward, live, and present way that we have.
Thanks, Lizzie. And hello, everyone. Gosh, I love the way you're talking, Lizzie, already, but even before we get to the source about what it is to be in relationship with one another and with others and with some set of ideas or some writing, because it was striking me that actually this what we're going to read, which is a letter from Carl Jung to somebody else. Obviously, sort of in the academic world of psychology at the time as it was written, I don't think it's designed to keep people out, but there's a lot of writing that is designed that way, which is you can only read me if you're part of this world and you understand all of that language. And so we get kept out of all kinds of conversations. But it also really struck me whilst you were talking that to learn something, to understand something, to for something to get to unfold itself in the midst of relationship is such a different mode to the way most of us were taught how to encounter anything, a sort of solitary, you either get it or you don't, you're good at this or you're not, that exams tend to produce. And but what it is to enter into a particular kind of conversation in wonder together and to set aside all of those judgments and defenses that we have, and to go, how can we give one another a hand into this? And also, one of the things that I always find in being in this conversation with you is, of course, I get to understand myself and you and the world and the source differently because we're together in a way that I never could if it was just me and the source. And what the model it is for us humans to learn is to learn this way. So I'm feeling very grateful that we're doing this. And very glad for all of you who are with us. Thank you, the many of you who are on podcasts and YouTube and live on Facebook and all the different places you can find us. And I also just want to make a request, as I've often done, to all of you who are with us. If you are finding this of value and fancy leaving us a really excellent review on iTunes, that helps people find their way to us. But also, if you know people who would love to be in this conversation, and there are 200 and something recordings available, please just feel very welcome to point people our way. We always love welcoming people in. And as always, the sources are in the notes that come with the podcasts and on our turningtowards.life website, where you can also sign up to get these by email, and in all those places on YouTube and on Facebook and in our Facebook group, which you're very welcome to join. And this is called Meeting the Shadow, and it's a letter from the great pioneer of psychology, Carl Jung, to P.W. Martin, who was the founder of the International Study Center of Applied Psychology, and it's from 1937. Who knows what previous correspondence they'd had? But anyway, here's this. I don't even know how I found this. Dear Mr. Martin, it is a very difficult and important question, what you call the technique of dealing with the shadow. There is, as a matter of fact, no technique at all. Inasmuch as technique means that there's a known or perhaps even prescribable way to deal with a certain difficulty or task. It's rather a dealing comparable to diplomacy or statesmanship. There is, for instance, no particular technique that would help us reconcile two political parties opposing each other. It can be a question of goodwill, or diplomatic cunning, or civil war, or anything. If one can speak of a technique at all, it consists solely in an attitude. First of all, one has to accept and to take seriously into account the existence of the shadow. Secondly, it's necessary to be informed about its qualities and intentions. And thirdly, long and difficult negotiations will be unavoidable. Nobody can know what the final outcome of such negotiations will be. One only knows that through careful collaboration, the problem itself becomes changed. Very often, certain apparently impossible intentions of the shadow are mere threats due to an unwillingness on the part of the ego to enter in upon a serious consideration of the shadow. Such threats diminish usually when one meets them seriously. Pairs of opposites have a natural tendency to meet on the middle line. But the middle line is never a compromise thought out by the intellect and forced upon the fighting parties. It is rather the result of the conflict one has to suffer. Such conflicts are never solved by a clever trick or by an intelligent invention, but by enduring them. As a matter of fact, you have to heat up such conflicts until they rage in full swing so that the opposites slowly melt together. It's a sort of alchemistic procedure rather than a rational choice and decision. The suffering is an indispensable part of it. Every real solution is only reached by intense suffering. The suffering shows the degree in which we are intolerable to ourselves. Agree with thine enemy, outside and inside, that's the problem. Such agreement should violate yourself as little as your enemy. I admit it is not easy to find the right formula, yet if you find it, you have made a whole of yourself, and this, I think, is the meaning of human life.
Thanks, Justin. Dear Mr. Martin, it's a very difficult and important question, what you call the technique of dealing with the shadow. There is, as a matter of fact, no technique at all. Inasmuch as techniques mean that there is a known and perhaps even prescribable way to deal with a certain difficulty or task, it is rather a dealing comparable to diplomacy or statesmanship. There is, for instance, no particular technique that would help us to reconcile two political parties opposing each other. It can be a question of goodwill or diplomatic cunning or civil war or anything. If one can speak of a technique at all, it consists solely in an attitude. First of all, one has to accept and to take seriously into account the existence of the shadow. Secondly, it's necessary to be informed about its qualities and intentions. Thirdly, long and difficult negotiations will be unavoidable. Nobody can know what the final outcome of such negotiations will be. One only knows that through careful collaboration, the problem itself becomes changed. Very often, certain apparently possible intentions of the shadow are mere threats due to an unwillingness on the part of the ego to enter upon a serious consideration of the shadow. I just have to say that sentence again. Very often, certain apparently impossible intentions of the shadow are mere threats due to an unwillingness on the part of the ego to enter upon a serious consideration of the shadow. Such threats diminish usually when one meets them seriously. Pairs of opposites have a natural tendency to meet in the middle on the middle line, but the middle line is never a compromise thought out by the intellect and forced upon the fighting parties. It's rather a result of the conflict one has to suffer. Such conflicts are never solved by a clever trick or by an intelligent invention, but by enduring them. As a matter of fact, you have to heat up such conflicts until they rage in full swing so that the opposites slowly melt together. It's a sort of alchemistic procedure rather than a rational choice and decision. The suffering is an indispensable part of it. Every real solution is only reached by intense suffering. The suffering shows the degree in which we are intolerable to ourselves. Agree with thine enemy, outside and inside. That's the problem. Such agreement should violate yourself as little as your enemy. I admit it is not easy to find the right formula, yet if you find it, you have made a whole of yourself. And this, I think, is the meaning of human life.
Thanks, Lizzie. So here's what I think this is about. You know, I don't know I haven't read a huge amount of Carl Jung's work, but when I read this, it seems to me that when he talks about the shadow, he's talking about everything inside of us that is really hard for us to encounter, that we would rather wasn't there, that we'd push out of view, that we pretend isn't us. You know, I'm this kind of person, not that kind. Like, I'm so lovely, I would never be angry with someone, or I'm so angry with everyone, I could never love. Doesn't matter which way round you put it. And that we always have, as well as sort of something really central in ourselves, we always have these parts of ourselves, some of which we know is really close in, and some of which are held really, really far away, almost like they don't exist. And that, I mean, Jung's not talking about this here, but that itself is a big problem. Not only is there enormous suffering in it, but also we tend to do things like project our shadow onto other people as if it weren't us. Like, I won't own my own rage, but I'll imagine that you're rageful and then judge you for your ragefulness and all of those kind of things that we do with the parts of us that we can't tolerate. So I think that's the background to it. So I really, really love this, which is that seems to me that what this is about is there's something really important about bringing those parts of us in, bringing the exiled parts home so that we can own them. And it's partly a matter of our own, it's a matter of our own wholeness, but it's also something sort of really ethically important, which is as long as we're pushing parts away and pretending we don't have them, they have all these ways of showing up that probably aren't helpful to us or to anyone else. They tend to take the driving seat without us even knowing, and that's how we can get into terrible pickles and terrible unkindness, terrible cruelty sometimes. So if we're going to do that, there's no technique you can use to have that happen. You can't plan it, you can't map it out, you can't do it by force, you can't make some part of yourself that you don't really want to encounter meet you on the middle line just because it's the middle. It's going to involve, and this was this line that I am, very often certain apparently impossible intentions of the shadow, the things I can't deal with, are really only threats. And they're threats because we're unwilling to enter into a serious consideration that our shadow might be there. So this touched me so much. I know sort of there's a way in which it reads like a sort of very academic piece, but gosh, Lizzie, I could feel as I read this, all the ways that I have pushed away what's inside me to try and beat it or to try and free myself of it. And just like any person who is intimate and close in, if I push them away or try to force them to come into my line in exactly the way that I want, it's not gonna work out well. And what I have to be is I have to be in relationship with it. And that relationship's really not easy. It's really not easy to find a way to live in a proper kind of respectful, harmonious interplay with another person or with a part of ourselves. We can't just package ourselves up. There's something wild about us. So I find great relief in this part at the end where he says that what we have to be is we sort of have to be in full swing with this sort of sense of inner difference in us and not try and diminish it. And let things melt together and recognize that that's really not going to be easy, that our sort of wish for it to be easy is part of what doesn't help. And that the work is to include, it's such great language, to include, to agree with what's here, but not to violate ourselves in the process. And that, you know, what it is to find, for me, it's, as you know, Lizzie, it's been a big part of it has been the parts of me at various times in my life. It's been that of me that's really angry. And it's also been that of me that's really afraid.
Mm.
And I've tried to pretend they're not there. And I've tried to dominate them. And I've tried to knock them into shape. And I've tried to, and sometimes I've been dominated by them.
Mm-hmm.
And more I can feel myself alchemizing with them. Gradually, it's not done. But gradually, so that fear and rage are, then it's so hard to get language for it, but they have a place that is, they're both, fear and rage are both full of life. They're absolutely bursting with life force.
Mm.
And when they can find a place in me that doesn't have me give up me and they give up them, but somehow, and isn't in the middle, but is sort of like an ongoing learning about each other to and fro, then I think I get to be way, way more fully inhabiting myself. And I also, seems to me that I get, maybe the best word is sort of way more agency, much more possibility of actually really sort of bringing them to bear in service of intentions that I hold very closely and very strongly, that really seem to matter. So that's the sort of the territory that I'm entering into what this might be in.
I feel moved in lots of ways. And the thing that's grabbing me most, Justin, is this unwillingness of the part of the ego to enter upon anything as serious. So I think part of this is saying, like, if I don't take myself, the parts of myself seriously that are causing me issues, if I don't turn towards them and say hello and welcome them, that in itself is the problem. Like, so I feel very kind of like excited that I don't have to be, there's an opportunity and a possibility to not be so, I don't know, tied up in knots by the parts of us that feel destructive or not in line with the way we want ourselves to be in the world or take us out or cause problems in relationships or whatever. And that if the problem is not taking them seriously and I can make a choice to take them seriously and be in conversation with them and work with them and be open to them, already something else changes. And you know, this piece where Jung says that the technique consists solely in attitude. You know, that there's a kind of an attitude of openness. And for me, this whole piece speaks of like just an inner openness and an outer openness, just to be a welcome. So if I can be a welcome to anything that arises, either in another person or myself, and take whatever that experience is seriously and turn towards it and be in conversation about it and feel and acknowledge and welcome, the nature of the problem itself will change. Like, that for me is the kind of, oh my gosh, like So just by facing into something, the nature of the something changes. Like that's when I start to go like, oh God, it's like that tree falling down. And if I'm there, the noise happens. But if I'm not there, maybe the noise doesn't happen thing. It's like, I feel like I can feel my power in the system because I go, oh, so my interaction with something changes the something. And that's when I start going, okay, now this is really interesting to me. Because the nature of humanness starts to be very different than victimhood or the world is being done to me. So suddenly then facing into these parts, I can feel the power in it. I can feel my individual power to be a person who's at the powerful center of life, rather than being flung around by a random universe and feeling like, well, there's nothing I can do, I may as well go with this. And I feel like that plenty of times, of course. And then this kind of subtle entering in to the realms of, oh, so my presence somewhere in the way that I interact with something has an impact on the something itself. Like I could be very afraid of, and my ego, to use Jung's language, could be pushing away some aspect of myself, but that pushing away is making that aspect of myself what it is. And so then as I turn towards it, that aspect of myself might not even be the aspect that it currently is, because I'm away from it anymore because I've turned towards it. And so to find my way towards and to feel, and this has happened, I'm thinking of some sessions I've done in IFS, Justin, internal family systems, where I remember I encountered like this really strict Cruella de Vil part of myself, who was really scary and really organized and really excellent hairdo and very strict and very straightforward about everything. And when I began to be in conversation with her, and she's a part, by the way, of me that doesn't act or anything, she just judges me. She just stands there and tells me all the ways that I'm not tidy enough or not organized enough or not doing well enough in her regard, kind of thing. But she doesn't, like, she takes hold of me, she doesn't necessarily take hold of anyone else, although maybe she does and I can't see that yet or something. But she takes hold of me, and then I think, oh no, I, you know, and all these things spring from it, which is quite punishing for me. And as I turned towards her and asked her some questions, the form of her changed, because she didn't need to, because I was with her, she didn't need to be such a kind of pokey version of herself, such a pointy version of herself. And so then I can feel it now, because I literally turned my body towards her, because she was kind of over here, like I was trying to keep her away because I don't really like that. It's a bit unpleasant being judged all the time, you know. And as I kind of turned towards her, I was like, okay, well, should we have a chat? She was actually quite kind of shy. You know, she changed because I was there then rather than had my back to her. And so I feel like this invitation to take the parts seriously doesn't mean to kind of give them all of the power or something, or say that they're in control or that I should be like that now or something, and to kind of what's that word, like give everything away to them or something. That's not what turning towards them means. It means being myself and being in my grounded, you know, heavy human center, and saying hello as a grown up, as an adult, and being in a curious, open conversation and saying, oh, this is a something. And yes, it manifests on the inside of me sometimes, but I can find the distance between me and it enough to be in conversation with it. And then it gets to have a voice. She got to be heard. She got to feel seen and appreciated for the intention that she has. I got to say some things to her. She got to say some things to me. And I think she still exists. I didn't like smash at a smithereens or something, but I did. I think what is this invitation at the bottom, which is that I agreed with her. You know what I mean? And I don't mean that I threw myself away to her with her, but I said, I can understand. Okay. Yeah. It really matters to you that I am proper. It really matters to you that, because that keeps me safe in the world. And she was linked to my ancestors at different times in the world where to be a certain way meant survival, to be proper, to be polite, to be like good meant that you made it and that you didn't languish in a drain somewhere and starve. So I found her good intention and I found the links in all kinds of ways. And so she then was like, oh, I think I can put my stick down now. And I think I might have a seat and rest my stick on the chair rather than whack you with it. And so the problem itself changed. Anyway, it's a very long-winded way of like describing it feels very complex. And I feel like an example actually helps me to kind of be in relationship to this in the right kind of way, which is productive rather than the academic feeling or something.
Yeah, I think our stories about it, I think telling a story as you've just done with enough, that's long enough and with enough depth is really important in this. as you were talking, I was feeling into all different kinds of parts of myself. And I could tell stories about all of them. But your story is enough. Right, so it's enough, it's so beautiful, and it's reminding me that, first of all, something I know that we've been very committed to in this conversation is this account that you're giving and that Carl Jung is giving, that on the inside we are many. It's really important and really unusual in our culture. In fact, I was in a conversation with someone yesterday who said, you know, if you can hear more than one voice inside your head, there must be something wrong with you. And I thought, I just disagree so strongly. I think we have so many in us that show up as feelings and thoughts and attitudes and dispositions and fears and everything. And what really moved me so much in what you were saying, Lizzie, is you said, when we shift our relationship with the something that we've been turning away from or denying or running from or trying to control or pretending doesn't exist, it changes, because what's in us, the many, many, many parts of us, are all relational. They're all made of relationship. So I've had parts in myself that are desperately terrified of being outcast. And because it was so difficult for me to feel all of that fear, I've got into outcasting the parts that were so terrified of being outcast, which creates this rigid, like, keep away from me, keep away from me. I don't want to feel your presence. I don't want to feel your presence. And just like you said, the moment of turning towards, not to give up on ourselves in favor of what the part wants or something, but to be in the relationship of you're here and I'm here and we're here together. I'm now what? Instantly starts to change the nature of the relationship. And I really value what Jung says here, is that sometimes that's just going to be the beginning of what is a very tortuous process of coming to know one another over a long, long period of time. Sometimes we turn towards a partner and goes, thank goodness you saw me. Like, took you your time, here I am. I'm not going to carry on doing what I've been doing before. But very often it's rightly much more complex than that, but the first move is to turn towards that which we have been doing something else to. And actually I think it's really important for our own, for the sake of our own suffering and all of that, but I also think it's really important for the kind of world that we make, because we can get into collectively into denying the existence of parts of ourselves. We can say, you know, we can make cultures where we say no one gets angry around here, there's no anger, there's no hate. And we pretend that those parts of us don't exist and we hold them in the shadows, and they can have a way of making themselves known that is entirely at odds with the kind of people that we might really want to be. We can create in ourselves and then between us, outwardly kind cultures that are deeply, deeply, deeply hurtful and discriminatory and cruel with that, and pretend that we're not, because precisely because we're not doing this inner move. So I think it really matters on the scale of you, Lizzie, getting to live without being beaten over the head by Cruella de Vil, who's inside you, and sort of finding an accommodation between you and really honouring that of you and of your ancestors that needed to learn how to live in a certain way, and including that and having that available to you, gosh, full of gifts. And I think it really matters on the scale of families and communities and society as a whole that we do this, that we don't keep on pretending. And this is a slight jump to the side, but it was so strongly implied by what you said, and I just really wanted to honor it, is that I think it's true when we turn towards those parts of ourselves that Jung calls the shadow, that they change because we don't use some kind of technique, but we meet them seriously. I also think it's true of one another.
Mm.
That so often, if I'm in difficulty with you, I want to solve the difficulty by having you come round to my way or stopping doing the thing. But often, not always, but often, once I shift my relationship to what it is to be with you and come to you with a different kind of welcome, who you are in the relationship with me changes too. Not in ways that I can control, but I think just the point here is that we're relational all the way inside and all the way outside. That's the sort of the fundamental sort of thing about being that we're talking about here, is that it's all relational in some way.
Mm. Well, I have to say this, the beginning of the last paragraph, such conflicts are never solved by a clever trick or by an intelligent intervention, but by enduring them. And then you have to heat up such conflicts until they rage in full swing so that the opposites can slowly melt together. The place where I know that that's true is in my marriage. You know, that there are times when we are so in our opposite places about something and it gets into full swing. And then somehow, I mean, and I guess there's a bigger conversation about the context in which you hold a marriage and what is a marriage, what's it for, and what's a container of a marriage and all that stuff. But somehow with our container, I feel like it's really been safe enough for us to be mad. I mean, you know, be like really at opposite ends of the whatever the scale is. And over time, this slowly melting together thing is, it has happened, and it is as a result of the suffering, which is what, you know, the suffering shows the degree to which we're intolerable to ourselves. That makes so much sense in the context for me of a close relationship where you're consciously going, well, we want to be here and we're going to keep being here, and this is hard and we're going to keep being here. And there's a way that over time, the full mess of it, because it's a mess in a way, mess can kind of meld with each other, tidiness can't. I'm just seeing that afresh now. It's like there's something about the quality of mess in that it can mix with other messes and it can be intimate with other messes, but non-messing, like two made Lego kits can't interact with one another. Right. But if you take them all apart, the pieces can make something completely different, which is a whole new Lego construction or whatever. So I feel like there's a kind of a breaking apart and a resulting combination of messiness that can happen in life that seems to me to be to do with all of this. And it is like diplomacy, it is like kind of waft, and it's like parenting as well, you know, wafting things around rather than trying to stick them in a box. It seems like the most sensible way to interact with the beings. Because the other way doesn't seem, in my life anyway, to work. And so this whole invitation to embrace the enemy, as Jung calls it, you know, the thing that feels opposite or not desirable or shadowy and maybe shameful, or I don't want that, or I don't want to be that, or I would never be that, you know, that feeling of I could never be that person. But turning towards and finding security enough in relationship, probably, maybe that's where these things have to happen, to have the courage to say, okay, I'm going to be with this intolerable part of life that doesn't seem to be, maybe it's not even showing up in my life, like inside of me, but it's on the outside in another person, or it's in the world or something. But that we, if we could turn towards that and be with it and be curious and interested in this way, and this willingness, this to be a, to have a willingness inside of myself to enter into this serious consideration with all of it. Maybe that's well, the end of this, I guess, is the point, is that it's an invitation to wholeness.
Mm.
I love that phrasing. You've made a whole of yourself, Justin. Not a fool of yourself, but a whole of yourself. Whole of
yourself. And that, I think, is the meaning of human life.
Yeah, let's make holes of ourselves.
Yeah.
So anyway, I feel really, really grateful for this and really opened by it. And yeah, validated in our experience as well, Justin, of this being kind of this kind of openness, quite scary openness sometimes. Feels like it's born out in this very old letter. And funnily enough, the humanness has been going on for quite a while.
So we come towards the end of our time. A couple of things from what you've said that I'd really like to say back to you in honor of what you said, and just to recognize sort of the new understanding arising in me from hearing you. That the container really matters. So in a marriage or any other kind of relationship, to do this, the container we make that makes it possible to do this, but then also the container we make in ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That turning towards in this way is a kind of making ourselves be messy, letting ourselves be porous and shifting and changed by what we encounter. Because I suppose you could turn towards in a very rigid way. Yes, I'm turning towards, but I'm not going to be affected by you. That's not what we're talking about here. And just the other thing that really struck me is that from what you said, is that very often the thing that we find in another person that is really difficult is also something inside ourselves that we haven't yet done this work with. It's so hard for me to be with your rage because I'm in denial of my own rage. And so what we, I don't want to say it in some absolute way, because that's, of course, not always the case, but often the difficulty, the suffering we encounter, our own suffering we encounter in the world, will give us a pointer to somewhere in ourselves that we could also be attending at the same time as we attend to the thing between us and other people. There's also a clue to an opposite or a something inside of us that we haven't yet allowed ourselves to be in the heat of the, what Jung says, the heat of the conflict or the heat of the difference.
Yeah.
And there is such a key to our own, the path to our own wholeness, is to be really attentive to what happens in the world as well as what happens inside us, as a key to where our turning towards is called for.
Mm.
Well, as always, I'm so grateful, Lizzie, to be in this conversation with you, and I'm triply, quadruply grateful that you're willing to tell me when I bring a source that was really hard to understand, and then be in the conversation. That really, really matters. And we go, that's the excellence of having two of us who are choosing sources, is that what comes in comes from different hearts and different minds and different bodies each time. And we will, very grateful to everyone for being with us, and we will be back again next week in all the same places, and look forward to seeing you then.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Justin. Bye.